Hey, Buddy Manning here. Welcome to a new edition of Dome Theory. Took August off. We're back. We're ready. Football looms. Basketball looms. Basketball is back. In some minds, mine, of course. I don't know about these two's enthusiasm for the World Cup, but this is one of my favorite sporting events every 4 years. Now, I haven't watched a ton this year because it's on at 4 a.m. and there are no Celtics playing, but Team USA had a nice 8:40 start today, caught it. They lost, as I keep pushing that they're not going to be the gold medalists here. I felt that way in the Olympics a couple years ago. Felt that way with the last World Cup team with all the Celtics. And now they lose to Lithuania. And one of Nate's favorite players in Jonas Valanciunas.
I literally stood up for Jonas Valanciunas like twice.
And now he's your guy now.
Hey man,
why not claim him? He's great.
He's a solid big man. Walking 15 and 10. I'm not mad at it. I'm just establishing that I literally only cape for this man twice.
That's enough. You put on the cape one time. That's your guy now. I don't know. Like,
is that the rule? Are we establishing the rule
on those people?
You called him a top 10 center. That's what you did.
Is he not?
See, now
we'd have to count him up.
You're proving your own point. That's your guy.
I merely just stated a fact is all I'm saying.
I'll tell you this. He can put up numbers in a hurry. I'm trying to pull up his box score from today. But he did a dribble handoff at one point, caught it back off the bounce, drained a three. He's got like the Aaron Baines three-point form, and he splashes it.
He's a fine center.
The guy is so much fun. He finished this game with, let's see, where is he here? 12 points, 7 rebounds, and 2 blocks. And Lithuania shot 56% from 3. So there's how you win, 14 for 25. This is what we talk about with Lindo, and I wish he was here for it. The U.S. isn't sending its best to these competitions, yeah, which is pretty routine for the World Cup here. But it's a roster that doesn't have much cohesion. It's a roster that's trying to figure some things out on the fly here. They're still better than everybody, talent-wise, but you go against a team like Lithuania here that's probably got some experience together, that's got a different kind of style, banging, rebounding, more physical, and you're prone to lose, as they did a couple years ago. I'm sure you caught that World Cup 4 years ago, Taylor, with all the Celtics on, and it was a pretty similar story.
Yeah, I don't know. It's just one of those things where you're not getting the best from the USA, right? And I haven't been super locked into it. I've been, you know, a lot of what I've been getting from it is from you, Bob, in the chat.
That's what I'm here for.
Well, especially like 8:40 tip. That's a 5:40 a.m. tip for me.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
On Sunday, I'm not doing it. So
that helps you with the 4 a.m. tip, though. You're not a 1 a.m. guy like me.
Not anymore. A couple years ago, I was a 1 a.m. guy, but hey, things change. I think you're just not sending the best. And so you're sending like it's like tier 2 and tier 3 NBA players. Like the 2014, I'm looking at the roster for the 2014 team now, and you have like Steph, Clay, Derrick Rose, DeMar, Kyrie, DeMarcus Cousins, James Harden, Anthony Davis. You got Andre Drummond, Plumlee mixed in there. So it's not even up to that level, because by 2014, like Steph, Clay, Harden, Kyrie, like they weren't champions yet, but they were like right on the doorstep of being champions. And I don't think there's anyone on this team who's at that level yet.
Are you an Anthony Edwards guy?
Well, so the Anthony Edwards thing is interesting, because they had there was one game earlier in the tournament where he went off against Germany, I think.
Yeah, in the scrimmages.
And
yeah,
People were like ready to anoint him like Michael Jordan. They were like, yep. They were like posting like clips of him on Twitter. They're like, who does this remind you of? Jordan. And I'm like, all right, this is the FIBA World Cup. Like, it's not even the Olympics. And even if someone went off in the Olympics, I'm still not going to be like, oh, yeah. Like,
even Tatum?
Well, that's a different story for me. Like that, but that's my favorite player. And when the Olympics come around in 2 years, or no, that's next year, right?
Yep.
When the Olympics come around next year and Tatum's ready to play in the Olympics again, Anthony Edwards is going to have to give up the number 10 jersey, because it's going back to Tatum, because Tatum was the second best player on a gold medal team. You know what I mean? Like, it's different. If the U.S. was sending their top tier guys, even if you take the KDs and the AD and LeBron and let them stay, but I mean, you add like Tatum to this team, you add Jaylen Brown to this team, you add Book to this team, and like things look a lot different. So I think ultimately it's just you're not sending the best that we have to offer, and that's fine. You can't expect that, you know, every tournament that happens like this, but I don't know. I don't put a ton of stock into this either way. It's not crazy interesting to me.
Why is it interesting to you, Nate, as the decider on all things real and not real sports?
I mean, are we going in 5 years? Are we going to say, well, Anthony Edwards is better than Steph Curry all time because he has more gold medals than Steph Curry?
No. He's not going to win it.
But regardless, like if that were to be the case, we're not going to be debating.
No, people use World gold Cup medals champions. When they're stacking up. That's a big only, part of yeah, medals, I can say.
But literally, like World Cup gold medals, though?
Literally only for the Hall of Fame is what it matters. Nobody else cares about. We're not going to be in the finals and Brandon Ingram in the finals and it's like, oh, remember when he got that gold medal though? Like, nobody cares. Nobody cares.
Well, I feel like Melo's legacy boosted a little bit off.
So that he's the player I look at because he played on four Olympic teams and he was like, you know, if not the guy, one of the top guys on each of those teams. And like, the 2016 Olympics when Melo kind of like cemented himself as like he's like the Team USA superhero. So like for a guy like him, but again, that's the Olympics. Like this is the FIBA World Cup.
This is
it means a lot. And I don't want to discount it too much, but it's not the Olympics. It's not like so it's like when we're stacking up gold medals, it's like, all right, a gold medal in the World Cup is not the same as an Olympic gold medal.
So here's why this roster intrigues me, Nate, or this tournament. 4 years ago, it only intrigued me because it was all Celtics. They were all coming together. They were all trying to get ready for the season. So it was an obvious storyline for Celtics fans and people following the team entering the year because obviously it goes right in the training camp after. This time around, even though there's no Celtics in the tournament at all, none on Team USA either, you have Edwards, as we mentioned, Haliburton, who I'm just, you know, probably my favorite young player in the league. You have Brunson, who was a big part of last season with the Knicks. Jackson, Defensive Player of the Year. Bridges, who was averaging 30 with the Nets. You have some guys on here, and of course, Banchero, the Rookie of the Year. This is the next wave. These are supposed to be the next stars of the league who are on the come up here. And I think you could probably name four or five of these guys who are going to be in that All-NBA conversation one day. So who's going to break out here? And right now, the starters are kind of stinking up the joint, and it's Austin Reeves carrying them to the finish line in a lot of these games. Halliburton's been great too, but the starters on this team just aren't getting it done.
I can see the logic. Again, they're
like
not
you're waiting
playing.
For someone to really emerge. Like Taylor but, like, said, not Edwards had anybody. That.
It's one thing if you're playing if it's actual NBA talent.
Well, will you care when they play NBA Canada? Talent.
Huh?
Will you care when they play Canada?
Dylan Rich? Brooks is on Canada's team. No.
Shea. Okay. RJ Barrett. Olynyk. Just go with Shea then.
So you see how you started with four players that you had to be whittled down to one player. That's why I don't care. It's so easy for me to make the argument that, I mean, Shea, I love Shea. I love watching Shea. But aside from that, it's so easy for me to make the argument that who, like in reality, when the NBA season starts, are we really going to be caring about these players aside from Dylan Brooks, who he made his own bed?
Well, that's
and now
my
he has
question. Do
it.
We care about Edwards?
I think we would care more if he had a better team around him. I do think that it's intriguing to see him score as much as he does. And I think with Edwards, the story is really how much will he be able to accomplish on Minnesota? Because it seems like the roster is holding him back right now. And that's not something that we're going to be able to answer until the actual NBA season. Also, another thing, the WNBA exists. Like, there's actually real basketball happening right now. Like, there's just so, and on top of that, it's still nice outside. I'd rather go outside and play basketball. Like, there's so many other things I'd rather do aside from even including football is about to start up. Baseball is getting into the playoff races and stuff like that. There's so many things that I'd rather do than watch FIBA basketball that in 5 years nobody's going to care about.
I still remember that Celtics team. The big one's Edwards-Taylor. if I know what Nate says about the roster there, and I have to relent on the Rudy stuff at this point, unfortunately. But
Taylor, mark it down. That's two W's that I got in the last month from Bobby.
Carl Towns, by the way, for DR, who I was really rooting for here too. 7 turnovers, minus 31
in a FIBA game, minus 31. That's crazy.
Yeah, so I wanted to see him take the gold here and use that in favor of him, but he didn't come close. Does Edwards matter, Taylor, in going forward at like the highest level of the league? Because again, like you said, that's what people were talking about when he had the comeback against Germany. Yeah.
I mean, he only played 2 seasons, so we have a lot of time. You know what I mean?
Is this just his third year?
Yeah. If we look at, you know, another player we brought right into that, if after Tatum's second season, we were like, all right, now's the time to make our final, like, or like, where do we see this guy? Is he top or not? I mean, after Tatum's second year, it was like, oh, maybe like sophomore.
This is going to be his Edwards' fourth year.
Fourth year? Okay. Yep. So, but either way, like, that's still not a lot of time. And I think Edward Ant is like super interesting. Like, he's an incredible player. He's a great character.
I was just about to say, no matter what, he's great for the league.
Yeah, we saw him in the playoffs really play through injury, which is like not necessarily a good thing for him, but it is like a little bit of a throwback thing to see like a guy like kind of like gutted out when he's got like the tape all over him and he's clearly in a ton of pain, and he's still, it's not like he's hiding either. He's like really trying to like, you know, will his team. So I think Anthony Edwards, out of all these guys, Tyrese Haliburton, I agree with you, Bobby. I think that he might be like, out of, if you told me I could like pick one of these guys off this team and put him on, you know, like the Celtics or even just like any team, like I think Haliburton is so important because he starts so much stuff and he's such like an incredible.
But he gets into these games, it's a different dynamic.
It is different. But you and I have seen it when the Pacers play the Celtics, like he goes to another planet. Like he'll score 28.
Did you see, by the way, he did an interview with Windhorse and he was like, I'm circling this date. January, whatever. It's my first game on national TV ever, and it's against the Celtics.
That's crazy. It's crazy to think that like there is a national audience who doesn't really even know who he is, because like, you know, we've all watched it. Like he
was what, second in assists last year. He's incredible. Harden?
I mean, he has had like, he had a, I think it was the game that the Celtics were down like 30 at halftime. He scored like what, 30 points in the first half. Like he couldn't miss from anywhere, and then he gets everyone involved. So like, guys, I think there's like redeeming things to take from this tournament. You get to really see guys like, I know Brandon Ingram is really struggling, and so like stuff like that. I think there's important things to look at, but like when it comes to the overall overarching importance of the tournament specifically, I feel similarly to Nate, where it's like, all right, I'm not gonna, 5 years from now in 2028, I'm not gonna be like, oh, you remember the 23 World Cup team. Like, I'm just not. Now, the 14 World Cup team is the only one out of them that has ever stood out to me. Like, the 2014, because you had, like, all those guys, and it looks so much better in hindsight. At the time, I don't know if I felt like this, but, like, Steph, Clay, Kyrie, James Harden, Anthony Davis on the same team, and then they, like, you know, they took off from that year on, kind of is when all of them, like, really, really ascended from there. That's the only World Cup team that I look at like this, but I don't know. To get back to what you first asked, I think Anthony Edwards is super important, but I don't know beyond that one game against Germany. And I think that's just because people were basketball starved since the end of the finals, that they were like ready to anoint him Michael Jordan after an exhibition game against Germany.
I think we're fast on that. I keep saying with Luka too, even though I'm a massive Luka fan and he's into the quarterfinals of this tournament. He's been amazing statistically, unbelievable, but every year he's the MVP favorite. He doesn't end up winning MVP. So it's like, when's he actually going to cash these checks?
So the last thing I have to say about this tournament in general is that, yes, this group that's playing for the U.S. is the next wave of stars, kind of. Like, we already have the next wave of stars. Like, that's, like, after LeBron and KD and Steph and Kawhi and Paul George and, like, that next wave. And you can even put Giannis and Jokic up into that wave, or you can bring them down either way, because they're still in their 20s, right? So, like, they're still...
And their guys aren't in this tournament either.
Right, so it's like you have, like, this next wave is already the second... Like, if we call LeBron, KD, all those guys the first wave, like, the second wave with Giannis, Jokic, Tatum, Luka, Booker, like, that's already happening. So it's like that, like... That, like, this is almost like the wave after the next wave that we're, like, seeing here...
This is the youngest of the young.
And it also helps that guys, like, they're expected to play, like, 20 years now. So we get to see these.
I mean, Banchero's 20.
I know. So we get to see, like, this huge, like, it's not like guys play 12 years and call it a career anymore because they played 4 years in college. And I think LeBron has probably skewed a lot of people's expectation of, like, how long someone's supposed to play. But, like, we have this. This isn't the next wave. This is the next wave. And so that's almost why I put even less stock into this because, like, you know.
It's a good point.
Like, Tatum's not there. Brown's not there. Booker's not there. Just U.S. specifically. Like, those guys aren't there.
Yeah, and unfortunately, when those guys were there, they came in seventh.
But they were much different players then, too. I mean, you put
– Tatum got hurt, too, which I forgot about.
You put 2023 Jason Tatum, like 30-point score Jason Tatum, that's different than when he's out there with young JB and Kemba and, like, Mark – like, I love Marcus Smart. Sad he's gone, but he's not a FIBA World Cup player.
Yeah. So this is what I do like about this. Games like these, because nobody cares about Team USA until Lithuania comes through and beats them, then we have a chance to talk about them. So love the field, love how good the rest of the world's getting. There are some legitimately great teams in this field, including Canada, who barely survived today. Dylan Brooks, Nate, after an awful year, it's just been brutal for him. In fact, he let Brazil score the game winner against them. Came through today with a massive comeback victory on his offense and the game tying shot in this one. So shout out to Dylan Brooks.
That's going to age poorly.
Hey, no one has ever been treated, I don't want to say more unfairly, but the sentiment against the player I feel like has never gone as dramatically against anyone as it has like Brooks over the last.
Is that a serious quote?
The Grizzlies said,
The Grizzlies said,
we're not taking you back no matter what.
Deservedly so.
No, I don't think Bobby's saying undeservedly. I feel the same. I've never seen like where everyone is like, like everybody is like, nah, we don't like that guy.
He stinks.
Like that, like, it's crazy.
He earned a lot of money though. That did.
I guess my issue is that the concept that Dylan Brooks earned it, and there are a lot of players who haven't earned it that get vitriol for no reason.
Vitriol is different than like every basketball fan, whatever team they like, whatever country they root for, being like, that's public enemy number one. Like, I don't know if I've ever. It's like a
why? Because he went after LeBron. Is that
no? It's just well,
it's everything. Like
yeah, like he's been playing dirty all last season.
It's crazy.
Yeah,
like there's just been so much going on with Dylan Brooks, and none of it is look at him contribute to a win.
All right, well, I'm gonna squeeze in the NFL this way because we got a lot to talk about. FanDuel official sports wagering partner, CLNS Media, and good friends of Dome Theory here. They're doing a great offer right now. Go to FanDuel.com/Boston. You know the URL. But right now, if you bet $5, you're going to get $100 off NFL Sunday ticket, plus your usual $200 in bonus bets. It's an amazing offer right now. You got Super Bowl futures on the board, division, player props. Week one is less than a week away, so you can already start to look at those lines. In fact, I'll pull them up right now. And I'm going to get Taylor and Nate's favorite thing to watch for entering this NFL season, because I do feel like there's a little bit of juice heading into this year, even if there's only a small handful of contenders here. But again, FanDuel.com/Boston. Head over there, put $5 on anything. Again, Super Bowl, futures, divisions, games in week one, and you're going to get $100 off NFL Sunday ticket with YouTube TV. That's again, first time users in mass, 21 plus. $10 deposit required. Right now, Chiefs, Super Bowl favorites at plus 600. Eagles right behind them at plus 800. Bills, plus 900. Bengals, plus 1,000. As well as the 49ers for your top five favorites right now. As far as week one games go, you have... I'm going to have to pull them up here. But Nate, what's your biggest thing to watch for heading into this NFL season?
I have two, but it's the same concept. Watch how good Lamar Jackson and Justin Fields sling that ball around. Because they
of
finally.
Of course, it's all bias again.
They finally have outside receivers to throw to. And everyone who has criticized them has completely ignored the fact that they've had nobody to throw to. So now they finally do. And let's see what happens.
Taylor?
This is like, Well, so I guess I have two as well. I'm really interested to see how Aaron Rodgers works with the Jets, because for like our whole lifetime, Bobby,
they're the most intriguing team in the league.
Outside of, you know, a handful of seasons, like the Jets have been really bad. And especially for me and you, Bob, as Patriots fans, it's like we have a very specific way we look at the Jets.
They haven't beat the Pats since Obama. Right.
And so I'm really interested to see that. And then, you know, this is going to – I don't – as someone who was such a big, like, huge Tom Brady fan for my entire life, like, watching Mahomes get better and better every year and, like, seeing where he is at the age he is and dominating the way he is, like, I think until his career is over, the most interesting thing for me going into seasons is going to be, like, is he actually taking the steps to reach that level? Because like, I know some people are ready to be like, he's already like, you know, the GOAT. And I don't agree with that. I think there's a ways to go before that. In terms of talent, he is one of the best quarterbacks to ever play the game of football. And that's like undeniable. But in terms of him taking more and more steps to keep like it's like levels of greatness. Like to me, that's the most interesting thing. It's like, does he win another Super Bowl this year? Because it's not far-fetched. The same way you and I felt growing up, Bob, like with Brady on the team, it's like the Chiefs have a chance to win the Super Bowl every season that he's there. And so that's kind of where I'm at. It's like, to me, that like chase of greatness, like ultimate greatness, is the most interesting thing year in and year out.
Well, let me take the Pats angle, because right now they're underdogs on opening night against the Eagles at home. It's Brady night. Speaking of Brady, that they're going to honor him. I don't know if they're putting 12 up in the lighthouse or whatever, but they're plus 6,000 to win the Super Bowl in the division, which is just a grueling division. They are heavy, heavy underdogs to win it, plus 800, far behind Dolphins at plus 290, Jets at plus 250, and the Bills, of course, favorites at plus 120. This is a big year for Bill. It really is. I'm not knocking the legacy. I'm not knocking all his achievements here, but Brady's been gone now. This is going to be the fourth year, right? 1, 2, 3, third year. 2020, so fourth. They got to take some steps here. It can't just be grinding along 500 play, no real notable wins, just beating the bad teams, losing to the good teams, no real improvement from Mac. And I'm a little optimistic, Taylor. I like the new coordinator. I think the weapons are decent. I love the running game. And they actually got a needle mover in terms of excitement in Elliott, so I'm going to give them credit for that. And the defense, I think, is awesome. But, man, you got to show something here. And if they don't, you do have to think about, all right, where are we going here with Bill? Like, what are we doing here? What are we trying to accomplish? What's he trying to accomplish? And what are we going to make a decision here? And I know people didn't like my tweet about the Boeheim comparison. I'm not comparing their legacies, but it's just a similar sentiment of, where are we going here? Like, we're 500 every year. We're not really working toward anything. We're not really competing for anything. We're decent. We can win some games. We're very capable because of this guy's coaching. But is there an upside here? And so that's where I'm at. And I know you guys roll your eyes at it, but Taylor, this is hard to watch.
Yeah. This is how the rest of the NFL lived for the first 20 years of our life, Bobby.
Yeah. And their coaches go out the door every couple of years.
Yeah. And then they stay in the same cycle of being the same way with new coaches. Like,
fair.
The Patriots, every single season coming in, you know, they're going to have a top 10, if not top 5 defense every single season. And if we want to get technical, and I definitely feel more this way since Brady left than I did when Brady was still in New England. But I mean, those first three championships, those are defensively built championships. And you look at the middle section where they didn't win anything, their defense was very porous year in and year out. And then they started spending money on defense again and started winning Super Bowls again. And so as someone who always looks defense almost first when I look at a lot of teams, I don't have a problem with keeping Bill Belichick until he croaks in his office. You know what I mean? Like, there's nothing like that's going to, you're not going to get me to say that they need to fire Bill Belichick. There's nothing he could do to get me to say that they need to fire Bill Belichick. Now, I wouldn't be surprised if retirement is on the horizon or a, different role.
Yeah, they're never gonna fire him. But
like, he is old. You know what I mean? And that's just like a fact. That's not like a way that they can, you know, twist it to be like, get this guy out of here. I think that last year, and you and I agree on this, Matt Patricia is a defensive guy.
He was
the architect, or at least, you know, part of very successful defenses in New England. But to have him calling plays was asinine. And I get it. It's like you get a group of great football minds and you think it's going to work, but that's not how the NFL works. Bill O'Brien is back in town. I'm very optimistic about that because we saw Mac Jones develop from the beginning of his rookie year to the end of his rookie year with Josh McDaniels, a real offensive coordinator. And there were games that first season that he looked really good. And I anticipate more games like that this year than we got last year. I know there was an injury last year. You and I are also in agreement about that Bears game last year. It's like, why do the two quarterback things when you could have just sat Mac? If he's hurt, he's hurt. Like, there's no need to like have this awkward, like, all right, you play two drives and we'll pull you and put Zappy in.
Yeah, they rushed him back for no reason.
And so you and I agree on that. It didn't make sense last year. It doesn't make sense now. The division is obviously a bear. It's probably the best division in football. And you have three teams who were looking up for a very long time who are now like holding the cards in this division. But the thing about this is that, you know, there's a lot of teams with high expectations who don't meet them. I mean, if Miami finishes worse than the Patriots, it's not going to be surprising. I think Buffalo is stamped a little bit after the last couple years. And then the Jets have all the potential in the world. And you know, it's easy to look at it and be like, just take the yeah, it won't work. Like,
do you believe in the Jets, Nate?
Yeah.
Yeah,
I mean, I do too. Just by the mere logic of last year where their defense was lights out every single game and literally all the Jimmy G could have been their quarterback and they would have won probably 10 games last season. And you replace Zach Wilson and I forgot who the other dude's name was. I don't remember his name. But that you replace
Mike White.
You replace Zach Wilson and Mike White with a future Hall of Famer. And now that being said, like, I'm not really as high on Aaron Rodgers as I am like other players. Like, if talent wise, if I have Patrick Mahomes and I have Aaron Rodgers, I'm taking Patrick Mahomes 10 times out of 10, both in their prime. It doesn't matter. But that being said, Aaron Rodgers is a capable quarterback. He is someone who has won before. He knows how to get at least to the championship game in the playoffs. And putting that in there with all the young talent around him and still having that hungry defense, I would not be surprised if the Jets win the division.
Ooh, I would. The Bills are still the Bills, and they're playing on opening Monday next week, which is
going
to be.
There's a lot going on with them, though. I don't know how true this is, but I believe I heard rumors about Stephon Diggs wanting out,
Nate Report,
and stuff like that, and like there being friction between Stephon Diggs and the team. And honestly, if Stephon Diggs isn't there, Josh Allen is amazing. But if Stephon Diggs isn't there, nothing's going on.
Okay. Yeah, there's a little bit of kind of some suffering from success there. Well,
they haven't succeeded.
It's a team that like wasn't good for a long time. And then you start playing in these big games and you start having some guys who have real star power. And then things start to falter a little bit because that pressure is different than like, all right, we're going to scrap and maybe get in to a wild card game, but probably not.
Yeah. Theirs is having that.
Right. Like the expectations, around that. So I don't know the division. I'm not expecting the Patriots to win the division. I know that, like, you know, I've talked to some people in there, like are taking the under on them for like 6.5 wins. That's right either. And
that's the one thing Bill does give you is they'll be 500.
I'm excited to watch Mac in year three. I don't understand. I think it's part of because he complained a lot last year, and people just don't. He like people thought he was going to be Tom Brady the second he walked onto the field, and he wasn't. So that and our wonderful fan base, Bob. They love that when someone's not Tom Brady
No, I think so. We'll get to the other team that's struggling a little bit in Boston here in a second, but I do think fans have generally defended Mac for the most part. There's a little division there, but I think the heat's on Bill, and fair or not, he's the boss. You know, he's at the top. He's the face of this team. He's the GM too, which complicates things a little bit here because even if you love his coaching, the personnel hasn't been the best either since the end of Brady there. So That's what you can look forward to. We'll have more conversations as the season starts next week here on Dome Theory. And, of course, Patriots Press Pass. Taylor just doing an incredible job. Our other Taylor, Taylor Kyles, covering the team there. So go check him out. Go check Bedard and all the rest over at Patriots Press Pass. And, of course, show some love to FanDuel.com/Boston. Their best offer yet right now. I can say that for sure. Let's talk some baseball. Maybe the last time we do here. Well, playoffs, we'll see. I actually love the baseball playoffs, and I think it'll be pretty good this year with the pitch clock staying in place.
Can I give my shout out? I want to give a special shout out to the New York Mets for this very nice giveaway hat. We live in an era where ads are everywhere, and as these two can attest, I hate seeing ads on jerseys. I hate seeing ads on the field. I hate seeing ads on the court. So that being said, to have a giveaway hat with no visible, as you guys can see, no visible ad on it, something that I and Taylor would wear. I don't know about Bobby. Bobby is just a hater over there, but it's fine. Shout out to the New York Mets. Your season was not as good as it was supposed to be, but that being said, you guys still know how to put on a show.
They have stunk. It's unbelievable when I look at their record. But so has this team. I am so disappointed, Taylor. I don't even know what to say. It was one of the worst weeks I've ever had watching this team because they're right there. They're hanging in it. They keep showing us stuff. The guys come back from injury. And between just fizzling out against the Dodgers in a series that they really fought and showed something in to start and then just faded in by the end of it, and then to still have some hope going into that Houston series, you get three games against the team you're trailing. You're about 3, 4, 5 games back. They effectively quit in the first game and then just it was a landslide from there and they get swept and their season's pretty much over now. They had a lot of great individual performers this year. I thought as a team in a room, they kind of had a little bit of chemistry coming together, maybe even in defiance of the front office a little bit, not supporting them. But between the good and the bad, and we weighed them all year, Taylor, the awful fielding, the sporadic pitching and openers and all the nonsense they did to try to piece together a rotation and the lack of talent on the roster around the, you know, handful of stars you had here just overruled because they did not have enough this year to compete. And you know where I'm going to go, Taylor. Forget Bloom. Sam Kennedy coming out and saying, yeah, we really didn't have the depth this year. It's like, duh.
Yeah.
So here we go. This is a team that I think had a lot of potential.
You can't say they had a lot of potential. Here's where it's crazy how you do this. All offseason long in the winter, you're like, this is going to be the worst Red Sox team of our lifetime.
Yeah, we're past that, though. We saw what they were capable of.
You can't be like, I'm so disappointed. They had so much potential after shitting all over them all offseason.
Well, in the end, I ended up being right because this is who they are.
You can be right all you want, but you can't be like, you can't add to it being like, oh, they had so much potential after you came into the season being like, they're going to suck. They're going to be the absolute worst team in the league.
I also don't think it counts as you being right when mid-season you flipped and you thought they were going to make the playoffs. So you weren't right.
Because they showed me a little something.
Yeah, so you just flip and flop.
So either way, you weren't right.
Yo, we flip Bayless, like you can't do it. Like, whatever. I don't care about the argument's sake of it. Where I'm at is if the checkbook is open and Haim isn't doing the job, then you have to find someone else, right? If there was a green light for him to add depth at the deadline, not anyone on the front line, because that wasn't gonna happen, but if there was a green light for him to add depth, you know, come off a prospect, whatever. And I know there's tax issues and that's fine. If there is a green light then and he didn't do it, that's a problem. If there's a green light this offseason, because I don't think he's fired and I don't think Cora's fired either. If there's a green light this offseason to spend money and it doesn't happen, if there's a green light to move prospect capital and it doesn't happen, then you have to find someone else. This team, there is a core here that I'm very confident in. There is. Like
Barry?
Yes. Like Brian Bello, Tristan Casas, Trevor Story at shortstop, Rafael Devers at third.
Story?
At shortstop, yes. I know you don't watch the games.
He's hitting under 200.
Bobby, he has like 80 plate appearances.
Yeah, like he was hurt all season. baseball is a rhythm game.
He missed over 100 games.
Yeah.
And whatever, and however you feel about that is fine. At shortstop, I'm very confident that the Red Sox have their shortstop.
He's been great in the field.
Right?
He's been great in the field.
And so there are pieces here that I'm very confident in. Whether Alex Verdugo is here or not next year, I'm confident in him being here. But if he's not, that wouldn't be surprising. So there's things here. But the thing is, the biggest problem is, and this has plagued the Red Sox for, we're closing it on 2 decades now, is that they can't develop any pitching. They've developed 2 pitchers since 2006, like John Lester and Brian Bayo. And Brian Bayo, this is his second season. So if he crashes and burns, it's still just back to John Lester. In terms of homegrown pitching that they've developed, it's been 2 guys since 2006. And that's where it's unacceptable. That's where you have to go spend the money on a David Price in 2015. Chris Sale, you give him the extension in 2019. And then those guys are a little older, so then their contracts get terrible, and you have to do stupid shit to move them, or you just deal with it. I mean, Chris Sale at this point is making $33 million a year to not provide a whole hell of a lot, and he's not out there a whole hell of a lot. So that's the biggest thing.
He's been
they
awful.
Need to go, and it sucks because the way to fix it is always to spend more money on frontline pitching. So if they go out this year and they're able to add a Blake Snell, if they're able to add – you know, in a trade for 1 year of Corbin Burns, something like that. I don't think Cease is in the cards anymore. And he's also having a tough year. So like, I'm not so upset that they didn't trade for him. I think that
would Cease have helped them, Nate?
He had a tough year this year.
I thought that Dylan Cease deserved to be closer in Cy Young voting last year. I think that he still has the potential to be there. I honestly cannot give you a real answer because the Chicago other team that isn't the Cubs, I don't say their name, is just such a dumpster fire. I just don't know.
Yeah, you really couldn't judge them this year.
So, but what I'm getting at is that if they're able to add, if they can go add, you know, Yamamoto from Japan, if they can add a Blake Snell, because they have the money and they have the prospects to do this at this point. Like they had like a middle of the pack payroll this year. They've been under the tax now. So the tax reset, so they can go over again and not have to worry about a repeater tax. They're in a position to make the moves, whether that's free agency or in trades, to build a legitimate contender next year. And next year is the year. There is no like, all right, we're kicking, you know, we're punting another year and there's another bridge year. Like next year is the year. They have to compete because they have the pieces to. I mean, you have a guy in Tristan Casas who has the 6th best OPS in the AL in his rookie season. So you have Rafael Devers who, despite his fielding woes and his kind of inconsistency at the plate, he's still going to get 30 and 100. Trevor Story is a solid glove at shortstop. You know, the second base situation, they could probably upgrade there. You have guys, Yoshida has been a pleasant surprise except for this last month, but I think that's more fatigue than anything. So I think there's a clear direction here, which is more than we could say at the beginning of the season. You have guys, you know, reporters that I've seen where at the beginning of the season, they're like, there's no direction. And then in July when they're good, there's like, oh my God, there's some direction here. Now we see the vision. And now again, they're like, I don't know what's going on here anymore. So like, that's how it goes. People just ride the roller coaster. There is a direction here, and I wouldn't call myself like Chaim Bloom's biggest fan, but I'm definitely more on his side than I am not on his side. But if he's not the guy, if he can't go out and make these moves because he can't pull the trigger, or
he makes a lot of mistakes too. Really does. Like not trading Paxton.
Yeah, I mean not trading Paxton. But at the same time, if they had traded Paxton 2 games out of the wild card, you would have been livid. You would have been like, they're giving up 2 games out of the wild card. What a disgrace. That's a double-edged sword, and it looks so much better because since the deadline.
But you need to add in turn, and instead they did nothing except add Urias, which was just like, hey, I made a move.
Right, and you know, Urias so has been fine. This is the offseason where they need to go – and it can't be a Hanley and a Pablo Sandoval. Like, that's unacceptable. They need to add 1 or 2 frontline starters to begin with and then fill in with more talent because a lot of these guys they have stretching in their rotation, I mean, should be in the bullpen, and their bullpen was a strength all year until they fell off a cliff, and it's because of overuse. Josh Winkowski is one of the most used relievers in the league, and every time he's gotten tired, his performance has gone down. And when he's rested, he's dominant. He's out there throwing 98 for whole innings and shutting the sides of the inning down. And then last night he goes out there and inherits 3 runners and gives them all up. So it's one of those things where this season is probably going to be a net positive compared to what they were expected. I mean, MLB.com had them winning 68 games this year, right?
I don't want to hear that.
But you need,
we
you
watched
need to hear it.
We watched.
It, but you it, need it to hear it. And there's
you were also on the side of MLB Network when they put out that ranking.
There's this insane expectation, right? And the expectation isn't insane, but there's this complete ignorance to what's been happening here. Since 2012, I think they finished in last place five or six times. And so Red Sox fans are always like, we're the Red Sox. We need to compete for a World Series every year. In our lifetime, Bobby, they have competed for a World Series twice in a row once. 2007 and 2008 is the only time in our life that they have followed up a World Series season with a good season. Even 16-17, they won the division, right? They won the division 16-17-18. World Series in 18. 16 and 17, they played three games in the first round of the playoffs in 16, played four games in the first round of 2017, and lost both those playoff series. Like, I understand Boston is the second biggest market. They have the money. They've had the talent. But to act like this is like a thing where they've competed for the World Series year in and year out our whole life, and yes, they've won four of them since 2004, and that's great. But this is who they are. They go up and down consistently. They win a World Series, and they go last place. They won a World Series in 2012, last place, 2013, World Series, 2014, last place, right? 2018, win a World Series, 2019, third place. And then you have last place in 2020. So it's like this roller coaster is nothing new. And the expectation, or not the expectation, the like the sentiment that the Red Sox compete for the World Series every year just isn't true. And I wish it was true. And I think that part of building the farm in a way that you have guys to replenish people who leave is a way to remain sustainable. But they haven't been sustainable our whole life. And so this is just part of it. I mean, they win a World Series, blow it all up, rebuild, and win a World Series. Like, that's been the trend our entire life.
Yeah, they changed the ideology too. And I think they're going to have to. And I don't think the GM in place is capable of making that shift toward the aggressiveness now. So it's going to be an interesting offseason. And he can't shake this either. And I know this is an ownership directive. I know Mookie Betts came into town saying, I want to stay, and that's not clear. I thought this was going to be a much bigger event. I went. I was in the building. There were no Red Sox fans there. It was all Dodgers fans. Got a decent ovation. There wasn't really a lot of buzz around the game. And as I've said, this is kind of that demarcation point where a lot of Red Sox fans said, I'm done. And many of them were right to do so, because the years since have just been so turbulent, and there's been so much corner cutting and payroll reduction. And this is the only way it could go. Mookie came in the Fenway, provided a couple big hits in the first game in a Dodgers comeback win, threw a guy out on a nice throw back into the infield to the cutoff guy who caught Wong going around second. Just one of the many stupid mistakes of this team this year. And then just hit the ball all over the park in the rest of the games. He's playing second. I know he's played some short for this team this year, positions that were just gaping holes on the Red Sox to start this year. And then, of course, the outfield defense wasn't great on this team either the last couple of years. We're never going to stop talking about it because it was that bad. Like, the decision not to pay him, the decision not to play it out, and then the trade, which you mentioned it, Taylor. They're going to probably let Verdugo go and move him here. And he's actually been decent. And he's actually been one of the guys that I think has been one of the higher performers on the roster over the last couple of years. It's just infuriating. And it's been, what, almost 4 years now since the trade actually happened? He's about to win or be a runner-up in the MVP again. He's dynamic. He's one of the great personalities and recognizable faces of the game.
Really good podcast.
It's like you just heard Babe Ruth for years. Oh, the Red Sox trade Babe Ruth for a bag of balls. This is one of the worst trades in the history of the sport. It really is. I mean, it was so dumb. You knew it at the time. They got back less because they wanted to dump David Price's contract with him. And he's just back here spitting in your face a couple years later. And the building's full of Dodgers fans because so few Red Sox fans care anymore. And that's what hurt. Listen, you rebuild, you restock, you go young, all the things you talked about. The hardest thing that they're going to have to fix going forward is people look at this team and just say, screw them. And that's going to be hard to change after this deal and seeing what he's done in LA since.
This is not the most important point, but I just want to point out how I was told that the Dodgers don't have fans.
That surprised me. The amount of fans that were at Fenway.
Dodger fans traveled super well. I mean, it's different. Like being in the Bay Area, I've gone to Dodgers Giants games. Like stadium is three quarters blue and white. You know, and that's like a rivalry. That is a rivalry.
I'm honestly more shocked at that.
You know, it's. I mean, they travel well, and there's. So, I mean, there's such a national brand. You got Dodgers fans on the East Coast and the West Coast because of, you know, moving from Brooklyn to LA. You're not wrong, Bobby. Like the Mookie Betts trade is the worst trade of.
It hurts to think about it.
It hurts a lot. I mean, I didn't watch the team for like a year and a half, year and three quarters after that. I mean, the COVID year, I think that was understandable. Like, I had no interest in watching 60 games with no fans. But even 21, it was, you know, they definitely drew me back in, which I'm happy about. But it was just like, it was probably my first like old man grudge of my life where I was like, no, like, I've been wronged. In a way that, you know, I there's a lot more nuance to it than like the Boston Red Sox did not trade 14 years of Mookie Betts for Alex Verdugo, Connor Wong, and Jeter Downs. They traded 1 year, which was 60 games of Mookie Betts. And then because he was adamant, he's like, I'm going to free agency no matter what. Like, you can re-sign me, but I'm going to free agency. And at that point, the Red Sox salary had ballooned so much. I mean, they went over the tax 3 years in a row. They gave, looking back at it, a stupid extension to Chris Sale. You have money tied up here, money tied up there. And so it's trade him and move forward or keep him.
They want to get rid of the price money.
But
it
wasn't just the price money. They didn't want Mookie to walk for nothing, and I understand that. But at the same time, they like ran this smear campaign against him with the newspaper that they own and the television station that they own to try to be like, oh, it was actually this guy's fault that he's not here. It's not our fault. And it is part of the growing trend of mine and yours only team, Bobby, the Boston Red Sox, and one of Nate's many teams, the New York Yankees, letting the game pass them by. They set the table for so many years, and then these like new teams show up, and like it didn't work for the Padres, but you know, you have the Dodgers, you have the Astros, you have the Braves, who are all figuring out these ways to be sustainable and win year in and year out, and it's just not the same as it used to be. And I mean, the Red Sox for the longest time were like, we're not paying anyone $300 million. Well, that's what you need to do to get the best players now. It doesn't work. Like, they're not coming for less than that. And so,
well, imagine they go out and get the third big star in the sport right now, Mookie, Freddie Freeman, and
the third big, the third, he's number one, sir.
No, like their third.
Oh, their third. I was about to say, like, it's not even, okay. Anyway, two clarifying questions. Taylor. No.
Yeah.
The first, I assume that the Red Sox own NESN. What is the newspaper?
NESN.
NESN, yeah. Club.
Okay. Second thing, fire Cashman.
Yeah. Oh, fire, I mean, Gorm. He's been there forever.
It doesn't make it. The man said that Gio Urshela, we appreciate his service, but he is not Josh Donaldson. And he was correct in that Gio Urshela at least swings the bat when he sees a strike.
Yeah.
By the way, I really wish we had a New York Daily News.
I think that we've seen it this year more so than any other year, where both of those teams are floundering a little bit because the other teams have figured out the modern game better than them. And it used to be, I mean, we grew up in the height of, now the Red Sox and Yankees spend more money than everyone else, and everyone else sits on the sideline and watches it happen. And it was great. You know what I mean? Like coming of like gaining consciousness around 2003, when those two teams were the only teams that mattered, at least, you know, especially living in the Northeast helps, like being a fan of one of those teams. But it's just, that's not how it works anymore. And I think both organizations struggle with that. I think both organizations at some point, their ego will be hurt bad enough where things do change. And I'm fully expecting, like, everyone's like, oh, like, you know, Red Sox and Yankees, you never know when they're going to be good again. Like, I'm not going to be surprised if they're, you know, top two in the AL East within the next 2 to 3 years once again. But it's just a matter of like the game passing certain organizations by and them really struggling to like accept that this is how it is now.
It's about leadership.
In that scenario really of the Yankees and Red Sox being top two, is Brian Cashman still the GM? Because I would be surprised if that happens.
I don't think the guys who set up these messes.
The mere fact that already, at least if I'm just applying baseball logic, the Yankees are out of the Ohtani sweepstakes because of the fact that they have shown that they don't care about player health, the whole Anthony Rizzo thing. He's playing two.
The Sox should be in Ohtani.
He's
too,
playing
by
two.
The way,
he's playing 2 months. Anthony Rizzo's playing 2 months with a concussion, and nobody knows about it.
Yeah,
that's a problem.
The Red Sox and Yankees should both be in on Shohei Ohtani. He's the biggest free agent in the history of the sport, and they're the two biggest markets in the sport. Like, they should both be there.
Yeah,
you know what I mean. Like,
they're just not going
to
be.
Let's get to him in just a second.
Just because of Brian Cashman not being able to. You got Josh Donaldson, who's trash. You got. Some of it isn't his fault because the Rodon injury, okay, like he's working his way back from that. The Frankie Montas injury, who we haven't seen since last year, also working himself back from that. Like, a lot of it isn't his fault, but then at the same time, it's just like confusing things. Like, why are we DFAing or not DFAing? Why are we placing Harrison Bader on waivers? That doesn't make any sense. He's a sure glove at center field. And last time I checked, you need defense in baseball. It doesn't make any sense. Signing Josh Donaldson, who's already passed it, to however much money, and replacing a good bat in Gio Urshela doesn't make any sense. It's literally Aaron Judge and trash right now on the field, except when Garrett Cole pitches. That's literally it.
I want to give you a minute on Ohtani, Nate, because I know you're very upset about that, and it is an interesting story going into the offseason, probably one of the bigger offseason storylines the sports had in a minute. But we're brought to you by HelloFresh. Love HelloFresh. One of our favorite sponsors at CLNS Media we've had. The box comes to your door like Christmas, and you get prepackaged ingredients, great meal kits, of any theme you'd like, fish, meat, vegetarian options as well. It's all customizable. You can decide what date it comes, and it makes the cooking easy, fun. Under 15 minutes, you can get a meal done with HelloFresh, and head over there and you'll get 50% off free shipping right now. That's HelloFresh.com/CLNS50. And you'll get 50% off and free shipping when you head over there. We'll just do one more topic here this week, and we'll get you back sometime next week here on the group chat. Now that we're back here on Dome Theory, Taylor's about to get out of here, so I'll give him the first shot at the Shohei Ohtani news. Take it anywhere you like, but the money's probably going to take a hit here, and I think there's a real question of whether he'll ever pitch again.
Yeah, I mean, I think he's definitely going to pitch again, whether it's the same way. Who knows? This will be it all depends. If he needs Tommy John, if he gets Tommy John surgery, like, that's his second Tommy John in 5 years. And so that's a problem. That's like a real problem. And I know, Nate, like, you made a good point. It's like, why are we doubting Shohei Ohtani? Like, you know what I mean? He's shown that that's like a foolish thing. But if he needs another Tommy John surgery, like, I don't see him starting the way he does now, especially like passing 30. And especially, like, he's just so valuable. Like, it's not like he's invaluable as a one-way player, right? Like, he's still going to go out and hit 40, 50 bombs. Like, so it's not like he's just like this, like, guy who, you know, is a middle of the pack hitter, but a great pitcher. It's like, no, he's like one of the best hitters in the game. So I think the money will definitely take a hit. And I think the money was always going to have to be built in a way where it's incentivized by like hitting certain innings marks, because, like, you know, it'd be great to give him $600 million over 10 years and be like, yeah, $30 million for your bat, $30 million for your arm. And that's like, it works great that way. But it's like, are we going to expect 40-year-old Shohei Ohtani to be out there Cy Young candidate and hitting the same way? Like, probably not. So I think the money will definitely take a hit. I think the biggest thing is just if he needs another Tommy John surgery to fix whatever's going on in his elbow, I think that will change things dramatically. Again, I agree, Nate, that there's no reason to like doubt Shohei Ohtani, but there are like just human limitations of like, yeah, if you've had two TJs in 5 years and you're passing 30 and you're so good at one other thing, like, I could see a world where Shohei's like, yeah, I love being a starting pitcher and I want to be a two-way player, but like, there is part of it where it's like, you have to stay healthy. And I can't imagine he wants to just deal with his like elbow being shredded every couple years.
Yeah. Hear me out. I think this is one thing that people are kind of missing, and I'm not really sure what the baseball rules have to say about it, but Shohei Ohtani as a closer.
I could see that.
That would be you're down one run, you're up to bat, and Shohei Ohtani's coming out the bullpen. That's very scary. So I think that everyone's so tunnel visioned on Shohei Ohtani being a starting pitcher And rightfully so, he is one of the best pitchers that we have in the game. But I do, and I'm saying that more so for the contract length, because I think it is a valid question of how long can he continue to do this. But I can see a scenario where in 5-6 years, when he's starting to decline, his bat's still giving you 35 home runs a game. I mean, not a game, a season.
God damn.
35 home runs a season, like 90 RBI, depending on how many people are on base when he's hitting those home runs, and 30 saves a season. That within itself is valuable. Like I told you, Taylor, like I think one of the reasons why the Mets season didn't go as planned is because they didn't have Edwin Diaz coming out that bullpen. They didn't have that security of knowing we just get it to the ninth inning and it's over. It's our win. Yeah. So I think that within itself, that state of mind, also understanding that Shohei Ohtani would be well within his rights to sit out the rest of the season. There's like no reason for him to play anymore. Like I think he has MVP.
Well, MVP. Locked up.
No, I think he has it locked up.
I don't think there's anyone in the AL who could.
Yeah, I don't even think like the MVP race is literally only in the National League, and that's Betts and Acuna and Freddie Freeman and even Matt Olson. It's just Dodgers and Braves all around. But that being said, he doesn't really need to play. But that being said, he's still playing. He's still batting. He's still hitting home runs. He's still doing what he has to do to make sure his team wins. This guy cares about winning so much, and that within itself is also valuable to a locker room. But also just understanding that he does not cheat the game. And understanding that he doesn't cheat the game, he's not going to cheat the recovery either. Like if he comes back and he's not who he was, or he can never be who he was again, we can't say it's because he did not try. And I think that within itself, especially now where it's kind of questionable sometimes about like if like players are trying or if they're not trying, like does this game matter to them? Does this game matter to them? But not matter to them,
yeah, because like the most high on, stuff
like that. Like yeah, like he's like Russell Westbrook in that way. You know he's gonna give you 110%, and that within itself can give you something in a clubhouse that can revitalize a clubhouse. And say, for example, put him on the Padres. That could change the whole culture of the Padres, and all of a sudden they're in the World Series.
Let's get to his possible destinations. We got to say goodbye to Taylor. We'll see you next week, Taylor.
All right. I'll see you guys.
This is what I find interesting here. And obviously the most interesting thing is whether he'll get surgery, how long he'll be out, what comes of that. There's should be, given what he's done, the biggest race ever to get this guy. Like 29, 30 teams should be in it. As we talked about, Sox, Yankees should be in it. And it should, you know, that bidding should skyrocket him to, would we say, like 600 million? I think you heard like maybe upwards of 700 million for what he gives you, especially in terms of fanfare. That's not going to happen. And this is a big problem with baseball right now, is you have so many teams, Sox among them, trying to cut their payroll and make money off these teams rather than invest the money to make these teams be good. And I think this season's been a little different. You haven't had as many of those just awful, awful teams going all out, but you do have your A's and your Royals and whoever else that are
black and white Chicago
down those path. Yeah. Tigers have been pretty rough in that aspect the last
couple
years.
Tigers are developing though. That's okay.
You're not going to see the bidding reach a ridiculous point for him. You know, maybe one of the big teams like the Dodgers comes out and gives him a big, big offer that's going to shock some people. But if you had a bunch of teams really vying all out for him, it wouldn't matter if he was getting surgery. It wouldn't matter if he was taking the full recovery period, because there'd be so much demand for him that the price would just skyrocket regardless of what his health status was. But this was going to happen whether he was hurt or not, is that a handful of teams are going to stay back. There's almost, you know, you
the
can't.
The White Sox already said they're not even going to give him a bid, which is so ridiculous.
And it's not that word collusion, because, like, that's a heavy word. Mm-hmm. But what you've seen in baseball, and it's killed the offseason, is the teams all decide that we're not going to fight each other and, you know, do this bidding war on these contracts. We're all going to stay back and squeeze these guys a little bit and try to get these costs down a little bit here. And it's killed the offseason. I think it's going to kill the hype around where Ohtani ends up here. And it's probably going to cost him quite a bit of money here because he should be making a record sports contract given what he does.
It has to be a record sports contract. I think it still has to be that way. I think another thing that people aren't considering is just the draw that he is. Like, he is the single baseball player in the league that no matter where he goes, it's going to be a packed house.
The Betts thing we just talked about, how all the Sox fans quit, they'd be right back in the house.
Ohtani is Betts times 10 in terms of draw. And I love Betts. And I'm not even saying that to diminish what Betts has done for the game. It's just Ohtani is that big of a draw.
Wasn't he at City last week or something?
Let me tell a story about that. So it was Kodai Senga and Shohei Ohtani wasn't pitching, but Kodai Senga was pitching. There was a giveaway going on. It was like a glow-in-the-dark baseball. It was me, Vasquez, my girlfriend, and some other people going and stuff like that, right? So that being said, we're trying to get this glow-in-the-dark baseball. And the one thing we didn't consider, because we're going early so that we can make sure we can get this giveaway, the one thing we didn't consider is how many Japanese people would pull up to attend a Shohei Ohtani or a Shohei Ohtani versus Kodai Senga game, even when Ohtani isn't even pitching. So just understanding that you have a whole other demographic that will literally fill the ballpark just because Shohei Ohtani is there, that within itself is printing money for organizations, for franchises. On top of the fact that he comes back to what he is, on top of the fact that he's the best player in the world, he's a top five pitcher and a top five batter in the league. I guess I see, because of the injury, how it could go down, but I think that he just gives you so much to the point where it would be criminal for him to not have a record contract.
Where do you think he'll end up?
I can tell you where he's not going to end up. He's not going to end up on the White Sox. He's not going to end up on the Yankees. He's not going to end up on the Red Sox. I think the two teams with the most realistic chance to get him are the Dodgers and the Mets. The Mets, because the season was bad, but they've shown they are willing to spend the money, and they are shown that they will be competent in terms of trading the Verlander contract, trading the Scherzer contract for actually good prospects, bringing their prospects up now. Ronnie Mauricio, I believe he had 4 hits in his first 5 at bats the past two games.
He started a little Mariners buzz too.
I don't see it. They're small. I mean, I could be wrong. I don't know who owns them. The only small market team I could see paying for Ohtani is the Padres, and that's because they're printing money over there too. So, like, you need to have the combination of a big market and a blank checkbook, and
Dodgers are gonna look large.
And a competent. Bobby, stop it. You went to the Fedway. You went to Fedway Park yourself, and you saw how many Dodgers fans were there, and they're not large.
No, I said they're going to loom large because they're going to pay and they show they can win.
I'm still triggered by you saying that the Dodgers don't have fans. That's on me.
Well, it's more the buzz around them. There's not a lot of buzz around them.
Yes, there is. There's plenty of buzz. But that's besides the point. The only two teams that I can see with a blank checkbook and a big market are the Los Angeles Dodgers and the New York Mets. Those are the only two teams.
Well, I'm looking forward to it. We'll talk about it again once he gets there, but time ticking out on his time with the Angels. Thank the Lord, because it's been a disgrace.
He deserves better. He deserves a lot better. The fact that they traded for Lucas Giolito and Ronaldo Lopez to try and make a chase towards the AL playoffs, and they just quit. They just leave him on waivers. That's not a organization that deserves to have Shohei Ohtani. I'm sorry. That's just not.
Yeah, and I love Trout a month ago or 2 months ago being like, I'm about to make the all-out push to keep him here. Yeah. It's like, all right, you're right on time, Trout.
Trout got to get out too.
AG1, shout out to them before we get out of here. Drinkag1.com/garn. Get a year's supply of vitamin D, 5 free travel packs with your first purchase. It's a scoop in your water each morning that's going to give you 75 vitamins, minerals, adaptogens, probiotics, and more. The gear's fantastic. Mine's in the wash right now, my shirt. Love the crew neck. Love their glasses to drink them out of each morning with the glass straw. Feel real nice and refreshed after that, energized. It's almost like your morning coffee, and the reviews are great. Nice tropical flavor. You'll enjoy it. as many people have. Go check out those reviews and get your year's supply of vitamin D, 5 free travel packs of AG1 at drinkag1.com/garden. Great show today, Nate. Good conversation all around. I guess that's what happens when you take a month off here. But we'll be back a little more regularly with football season rolling. I can't wait for Celtics season to get going at this point. There's just been nothing to talk about on that front, but it's going to get rolling soon. Training camp just about a month away.
The concept of that midseason tournament.
I'm ready.
Here for Christmas.
I'm ready. Some fun storylines and some not so fun ones going into this year. Ben Simmons is talking. I want to get Obes' thoughts on that, but I will save that for another day. And of course, check out the Garden Report this week. We'll be back with a special guest and maybe our regular crew if there's some interesting news coming through. Porzingis and his Latvian national team are on to the knockout round. He's not going to play, but chance they make the Olympics next summer. I'm looking forward to the Olympics already. We talked about the World Cup at the beginning of the show here. Did some Patriots. Of course, shout out to FanDuel, FanDuel.com/Boston. You can go check that segment out if you missed it. And we are available on the audio podcast, iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, and more. Is our group chat edition. Whole group chat comes through. Thanks to Nate. Thanks to Taylor. Subscribe to the podcast wherever you get your podcasts. Turn on your notifications, Celtics All Access, CLNS Media. Subscribe and check out Nate and Taylor's podcast, reviewing music each week. We'll talk some music on here soon because there are some interesting releases coming and some ones that just came out that I want to hit on because it started slow this year musically, Nate. Mm-hmm. Now things are starting to pick up a little bit, I can see,
which
is good. Yeah, your whole
a lot of people. Drake fooled a lot of people 2 weeks ago, thinking he was going to release, and he didn't.
So stupid! I can already tell it's going to be his worst album. But certified,
yeah.
Certified Lover Boy.
The bias never ends.
Certified Lover Boy came out 2 years ago today. Special day in all of our hearts.
we're still on the Her Loss high, and I'm going to stay here until Drake proves me wrong.
All right. Thanks for joining us here on Dome Theory. We'll be back again soon. Follow us on Twitter, too, at Dome Theory. And thanks to everybody who hung out in the chat here and followed along here on Sunday. I'm Bobby Manning. We'll see you later this week.